We're in the fourth week of a six-week series called Biblical Conflict Resolution, and excited to continue on. The past 2 weeks, we've been specifically looking into just various passages of the New Testament that have to deal with conflict and issues that are closely related to conflict, how we're supposed to go about it. And so we're going to be rounding the corner a little bit, not that we won't be relying on the Bible, but hopefully what you'll hear today is very much in keeping with what you heard the past couple weeks. And if it's not, shoot me a text, email me, tell me some suggestions or bring up some questions, because we don't want to miss anything, and we don't want to be unbiblical in how we're doing this. So this week specifically, we're going to address how to confront. Okay, so that's spicy. And, you know, does the Bible have anything to say about that? I think we've already kind of talked about that, but more two different approaches that we're going to be taking today on how to confront. So there's like the logistical side of things, and then there's like the attitude side of things when it comes to how to confront. So we're going to be talking about how to confront from two different angles. One, a little bit more the process itself, and another is more, another is more important, and it's the disposition that we have when we do confront. So our first thing we need to assume together is a really big assumption when we're talking about confronting. What do you think is the one massive assumption before we get into like the logistics, you could call them, or the process of confronting someone? What is a necessary assumption that we need to have before we even get to that? Anybody want to chime in on that before I just give it away? What do you think the massive assumption would be before you confront? Yes, Alex. Well, that they're a Christian. That's yes. So yes, good start. And we'll build off of that just one step further. So yeah, that you are a Christian, or that the person you're confronting is a Christian. Either, okay, yeah, that's a pretty big assumption, and I guess the approach we've been taking is from a Christian perspective, so yeah, that is kind of a prevailing assumption. There is one more, too, that I think is really important. Yeah, good. So something along those lines, that there's, like, love in the equation, right? You have love for this person. That's a pretty big assumption, though, and so that's why we're going to start a little bit, just by way of reminder, and then adding to some reminders of what our disposition ought to be. So we're talking about how to confront missionally. So if that's what you have in your blank there, it's supposed to be how to confront missionally, on mission. Now, that doesn't sound very missional to begin with. It sounds like something that's, confrontation sounds like something that's contrary to mission. But if we really are living life on mission, this is going to be a natural result of that. Something that we will not be eager to be a part of necessarily, but when we are faced with the reality of needing to confront a fellow believer, we need to be thinking missionally, okay? So why do we want to bother with this? A lot of this will be pulling from a book called Side by Side, which is a book that we gave out at the end of the Resolved retreat this year. How many of you guys have read that book, Side by Side? It's by a guy named Ed Welch. A lot of people have been going through a book study with that. So toward the end of the book is where you'll see some of this content. Why do we bother? Well, we already talked about why we bother last week, right? Right as we ended, we talked about what James had to say and what 1 John had to say when it comes to confronting. You really are, life and death is on the line. And when you're confronting someone, no matter what the issue is, your disposition ought to be that of building them up out of a motivation of love for them. And so we really are saving each other from destruction when we do this. So the quote here, when we put sin off limits, in other words, when we don't want to address sin, this is the result. We cannot defend ourselves as being polite people who are merely avoiding meddling. Rather, we are Pharisees who, during a leisurely walk, avoid eye contact with the dying person we almost trip over. We're neglecting matters of life and death. What parable is he drawing from there? Yeah, the Good Samaritan. Do you ever think about this in the context of the Good Samaritan? I certainly didn't. But when we're just not addressing sin, not addressing problems in people's lives, we can't really, the defense can't be, well, I'm just a polite person, or I love you so much, I'm not going to address something that's going to kill you. You know, so you've heard it before said that if a doctor were to feel so bad about your cancer that he didn't level with you, I mean, he wouldn't be a good doctor, right? And so some similarities there. We can't just put sin off limits. And there's always a temptation to do that in a church, is that sin won't be addressed. It happens in a lot of ways. You come in on Sunday and, today's a really hard day for me already. It's not been a good day so far. And so if I were just to simply come in and not being addressing that in my own heart and be dishonest with other people when they're like, how are you doing? You know, that dreaded question when you're not doing well. You're just like, fine, and you don't really want to talk about it. If sin as a culture is not being addressed in a church, we're going to find other things to try to prop ourselves up, and it's not going to be the gospel, it's not going to be true things, and it'll really be disastrous for our relationship to God, but obviously our relationships with one another as well. So consider the fact that you're out there on mission to help people, to save people. God has you in that process of continually saving others and yourself from your sins, okay? So examine yourself first. I think you all knew that was what was going to be in the blank if you were looking ahead. So examine what first? Well, examine yourself first. There has to be an aspect of humility, first of all. That's the first blank under there. They say we already see our sins as worse than others' sins, so we have no reason to defend ourselves when someone points out our sin. So if we really are taking an estimation, a true estimation of who we truly are, we're not going to come in with this cavalier attitude. But there's the problem. That's the step that we probably miss the most, is I'm just so angry right now. I'm so mad. I just want to address the issue. And there's been no self-reflection in the process. There's been no self-estimation. Do you think you estimate yourself correctly more often than not? I don't. I get so embedded in my thing that it's very hard, especially like when you're mad. You can't even think outside of your own head. You know, you can't even think about really how much you're sinning when you are sinning, right? So humility means that we already see ourselves. You know, that's why Paul was able to say that he's the chief of sinners. I don't think he was lying about that. I think he knew himself better than anybody else knows him. And by God's grace, he knew himself. And he knew that he was a really bad sinner. Like, Paul, stop, so self-deprecating. I think he actually meant that. And I think if we come with that approach, it's not that you're making things up, and you truly could be the one sinned against entirely in this situation, but you should know yourself enough to know that, man, were it not for God's grace in your own life, you have the same issues, and more so because you know you, right? By the way you know you more is to have other people in your life too, because they help you point those things out as well. They're like a mirror. They draw things out that you didn't see. Secondly, patience, of course. I'm more interested in a direction in this person's life and less interested in how fast the people are changing. Okay, for me, at least as a guy, I don't know if it applies to all guys or guys in general, but if there's a conflict, I kind of want to just get it done, you know, just resolve it, just because it's annoying, and so let's just address it right away. And so I think, at least for me, I don't know if this applies to guys in general, but for me, I'm impatient when it comes to other people's changing, right? Aren't you? Do ladies struggle with that? Probably not. But I do, and so I want to think about that person's direction instead, because if I'm being impatient, it's betraying the fact that I'm actually out for my own good, or what I perceive to be my own good. The quote there is, when anger is present, humility and patience are absent. I thought that was really a good summary of all of that. So if you're coming in, you're approaching it, and it's out of anger, you're definitely not going to be humble. And you certainly won't be patient with the person either. You just want to get it over with, get it done, rebuke them, say what, get things off your chest. Where did that phrasing come from anyway? Get things off your chest. You want to just like dump on that person, and they're just going to take it no matter what. And they deserve it. See the good and the hard first is the next thing they have to say about that. The good and the hard. The good in what? Well, seeing the good. Generally, it's harder to confront someone unless you have a relational investment in the bank. And I'm borrowing some verbiage from Will Galkin, one of our pastors, and some guys who are pretty close to him. It's really hard to talk to somebody about their sin if you don't really know the person, okay? It's not that there aren't situations where you probably need to do that, but man, if you haven't really been taking interest in that person's life on a spiritual level to begin with, and you really don't care about them, then maybe you're not the one who should be confronting them. So you need to kind of check that a little bit, right? But then two, what I'm not saying is you need to like go in and compliment them first and then rebuke them. That's going to kind of ring a little bit hollow, don't you think? You ever have anybody do that to you before? Or they try to manipulate the situation by preempting some things and getting you on their good side so they can kind of jab you. I'm not saying that sometimes things don't need to be addressed right away, but make sure as best as possible, as a sign of wisdom, that this is someone you're actually invested in personally, right? You're not just, it's not someone that you're just dying to be annoyed with, for instance, or dying to rebuke. And finally, they've given you that option. So you're going for it, you know. I like the idea of relational money in the bank. It's like a little piggy bank. I was going to bring one of my piggy banks because I have two of them, but I forgot to. Well, actually, I ran out of time. But I've invested a lot in there, and I love my piggy bank because I try to ignore the amount of money I put in him, right? One day, I'm going to be surprised. That's my plan, is I'm going to be shocked at how much I actually put in there. But when we're talking about relationally investing in people, you need to be, not in a manipulative way, but it's better that you have a relationship with that person to begin with, and it's not just about one conflict. If you know someone who knows this person better, maybe you need to talk to them first, not by way of gossip, but just to get some insight on their life. Could it be that they're actually struggling too? And that's what the next part has to do with. Acknowledge the hard circumstances. Acknowledging the hard circumstances. Not the same thing as ignoring or excusing, if you like that better. It's not the same thing. It's acknowledging that sin and suffering are often linked together. You ever try to parse those two things out in your life? What part of my life is owing to suffering? What part of my life is owing to specific sins that I've committed? And you notice that there's actually probably some overlap between those things. We're kind of fallen on our own. And so sin and suffering tend to go along with one another. And so it's good to have the context of what that person is actually dealing with. There are people like me who respond out of anger sometimes. And I'm not excusing, that's wrong, okay? So that's sin. But sometimes there are other things going on that are a part of that equation. It's not an excuse for my sin, but it does give you context to know how to care for me as a person. And I'm sure you're similar in that way as well. And then just going, you probably could have guessed this one as well. There weren't any like really groundbreaking blanks this time. One at a time, okay? What's actually most important? Are you going to stockpile all the things that this person has done against you over the past couple months as all one big package deal? Do you think that's going to be an effective way to confront somebody? Okay. In addition to this, that's why being real amongst each other is so helpful as well, because you don't want to start collecting and you're just waiting for that opportunity. Okay, I've collected enough things that I'm really frustrated with this person about. Now I'm just going to dump all of them on. That's not what Christian living ought to look like with amongst one another. Okay? So one at a time. And throughout this whole process, there ought to be some prayer going on. Have you guys ever had to confront someone and you prayed a lot about it? Anybody been there before? Well, that's good, okay? Why were you praying about it? What do you think? What was some of your reasoning? Why did it bring you to your knees? You'll say the right thing. You don't want to say the wrong thing, that's for sure. It's a matter of the heart. Matter of the heart in what way? I'm sorry. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Good. So Jonathan said, a true statement. He has no power to change this person. And so praying for them is getting your focus on, again, the mission as well. What is God up to in this person's life? Okay? That's really what's in question here. Okay? So I really do want us to consider some of these questions here for just a couple minutes. I'm going to try to describe them really well. But I want you to think about them, okay? Yourself. And take some time to fill these in. I probably am going to have to move on faster than I had planned on, but let's start with the first one. Have you ever been confronted, and we can discuss this as well, have you ever been confronted about your sin in a way that was edifying and fruitful? Why? What made it helpful? So be thinking about that for just a second. I'll come back to it. Number two, have you ever been confronted about your sin in a way that wasn't edifying and it was hurtful? Why was it hurtful? What wasn't edifying about it? So what were the components about good kind of confrontation? What were the components about bad confrontation? When might you cover rather than confront a sin? Did you guys have been thinking about that at all when we talked about that a little bit? Okay, what should be covered? What should be confronted? Do you have any examples of that? And then are we actually willing to talk to people about sin? Is that something? I know that's kind of a yes or no question. Those are typically bad questions, but examine the pattern of your life. Are you willing to talk to people about sin or not? We can make a lot of excuses. Maybe we could also, as an additional question, that what are the excuses that normally you make when it comes to that? So number one, have you ever been confronted about your sin in a way that was edifying and fruitful? Anybody have an example of that? Some components that made someone came to you, confronted you about something, it was actually very helpful because, why? Any examples that way? And I'll try to repeat them for the recording. Yeah. 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 So the person came in with questions instead of accusations. I don't know why that's not my notes, but that should have been in my notes. Okay. Questions. Oh, I'm going to get it wrong. Questions kind of open up the heart, but accusations obviously put the person on the defense right away. Now, some questions are still statements. You know what I mean? Why did you, and you like tell them what they did. and you told them their motivation in the process as well. So you know everything about them. Yeah, that's very good. So questions instead of, because you don't have all the answers, really. You don't have all the heart motivation. I mean, yeah, sometimes you probably like, I'm a 90% on this one, but sometimes you never know what's really going on and what else it might bring out. What else? What have you seen that's been fruitful in your life when someone has confronted you? Have you ever been confronted? What were some helpful things? Yes. Timing. Now, why did we say timing?
It's one thing to say it in a heated moment.
Yeah. Yep. It's one thing to say it in the heat of the moment. It's another thing to wait and come back to it. There's a difference between being proactive and being a jerk, I think, you know? And the timing as well. You know in your own heart that I'm not ready to have this conversation either as the confronter. So if I'm not ready, this other person's probably not ready either. Josh? Yeah. Nonverbals, genuine communication. It was genuinely being communicated. I know this person's actually on my side. I know this person's trying to be an advocate for me. Is that accurate? Is that helpful? Yes. Yeah. What would that sound like when the person confronts the actual action rather than judging the motive? What might that sound like verbiage wise? Yes. I don't know what you meant by what you said when you said this, but when you said this, it made me feel this way. That's a great way to say it. Yeah. And giving them the opportunity to explain themselves, hopefully not to excuse themselves, but hopefully to like shed some light on the issue. Did I see a hand over in this section at all? Good stuff. Have you ever been confronted about your sin? All the hands go up. It wasn't helpful, and it wasn't helpful, or it wasn't edifying. Why was it not edifying? So in this one, it's going to be a little tricky. Was it that you just didn't respond well to it, you know, or was it like something legitimate? They didn't do it. They didn't do it well for this reason. Any thoughts on that? Yep. Yeah, that's a good example. Why are you always doing that? Is the person always doing that? Like really? 24/7, always? But yeah, basically the reverse of what Jonathan said. They come in. What is the reverse? I just lost what you said. Ah. What did you say so I can say it for them? Yeah. When you're approached in a wrong way. Yeah, definitely. I want to add to that. I would say one for me would be when the person's trying clearly to control the circumstance. They're not really. They have a specific outcome in mind from the conversation, and by George, they're going to lead you to that conclusion, whether you like it or not. We can't really do that. Okay, I mean, you can do that with your kids, I suppose, but you know. There are methods, I'm sure, but when you're dealing with someone, it's not a good idea to come in and to just try to control the outcome. And well, this is a 5-step process. I'm going to lead him here and lead him here and lead him here, and it's going to be obvious, you know. At this point, they will repent in dust and ashes, and we'll move on with our lives. I think trying to control it, you can tell when someone's trying to control you by the conversation. I've done it to people, so I know what I'm talking about. Anything else? Yeah, Josh. Ooh, vague accusations. Our first week, Mrs. Kopp said something to the effect of someone came up to her and said, "Hey, I just want you to know that I forgive you." And she, I'm not going to tell you what it was, but I forgive you. Wow, that's vague. And it's vague for the purpose of being manipulative in that case. And that happens a lot where people, they'll tell you that there's something wrong, but they won't get down to selfishly. They're trying to, I think, probably stay in control. That's your job. Well, if you didn't know what it was, then I'm just not going to ever do that to people. What did I do? Some people are dense. I used to, in high school, like, I was really bad. I said insulting things to people all the time. And I was probably on purpose, but probably didn't even know it, that I was doing it. And some people would just come up to me, and I've been holding on to bitterness against you for 2 years, and I just want you to know that I've forgiven you. And I'm like, what? You should have told me about that at some point. Probably wouldn't have responded well, but you should have told me. Anything else before we move on? Please examine your own circumstances this way on your off time as well. When might you cover rather than confront a sin? Anybody come up with an idea there or an example? When might you cover rather than confront? Yes. Yeah, so if there's like there's more to it, someone's mentally ill, they're not in their right mind, or can I add to that a little bit too? Like they're in the heat of a moment right there as well, like something, a really hard trial also is a component going on there. Yeah, so all those things, yeah, the whole human being, yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
There are certain sins that we do all the time. So we know half of them. And at times, I think we just forget to talk about
it. Yeah. So maybe, okay, so there's certain sins that are a lasting pattern in someone's life that need to be confronted. Otherwise, they're just going to continue to kind of dig themselves into this pit. There are certain ones that, could I even say that there are sins of commission and sins of omission? Okay, so maybe someone doesn't know they're not doing that thing that you want them to do. Maybe that's a time to actually cover. Did I just change what you were saying, or did I help it? Okay. I want to make my own words. Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Yes, maybe that. Yeah, the recordings. All of recording is hearing is yes. Yeah, sorry. We added that. Jonathan's basically saying that there's. I don't want to add to what you just said, so tell me if I said it wrong. But there's there are things that are a little more surfacey, that are more indicators of what's truly going on in someone's life. And that's what really needs to be addressed. Don't be so picky on the outward manifestations of that thing, necessarily. How would you add to that? Would you add to even... Okay. These are really great. And then, are you willing to talk to someone about sin? So let's just do a scale of 1 to 5, okay? 1 being, I really, really, really struggle with talking to anybody about sin and confronting it. And 5 is like, I'm there all the time, you know, just... second nature. Okay, no, 5 is like, God's worked in my life in such a way that he's made me willing to actually address sin, and I'm thankful for that. Not that I'm always looking to confront people all the time. So how many of you guys are truly more at a 5? You're kind of at a 5. Anybody? Josh Longoria is at a 5. Oh yeah. Josh Kopp is at a 5. Any other Joshuas at a 5? Who's more at a 4? You might have 4 there. Rank yourself 4. Good. 3? I wish they just take out 3, because I want you to be on like some side, okay? You take a personality test, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3, 3. Oh, I'm nobody. I scored nothing. Who's at a 2? You're like, man, it's tough. And who's at a 1? Like, it's really, really, really tough for me to talk to people about. Yeah. Yeah, and that might have something a little bit to do with your nature, you know? But it's probably something that God needs to work in our lives. Now, if you're the eager beaver, maybe God needs to rein you back in a little bit, right? But if you're the, I'm going to be compliant in every circumstance when someone's spiritual state is at risk, maybe God needs to grow you in that way, right? So, helpful stuff. All right, let's move on. We're getting into the how to confront practically now, and we're only going to get to 1 point today. And we're going to finish it next week, and then we're going to get into the nature of forgiveness as the final week, okay? Now, I will say that if there are specific things that you want addressed, specific circumstances or something that you feel like is not tertiary to this, but like really coincides well and it hasn't been talked about, please email me. You can go, if you want, at the easiest one's members, probably admin@gospelgracechurch.com. So that's easy. Or just text me if you have my number. Find a way to get a hold of me. Because I'd want to use the last week as a little bit of a junk drawer as well if we need to. So the first number one is just consideration. Consideration. Okay. And the question is, what does the Lord want to be seen? Now, I'm really actually going to ask you these questions. So here's what I need from you. Think back to a recent action or a reaction or a thought process of sin in your life. So here I am. I'm your teacher, and I'm going to confront you. Okay. Something this past week, perhaps. Something at work, maybe at home, maybe when you were on your own. Some unforeseen trial or conflict that brought out a wrong response, some inner struggle in which you found yourself on repeat. Please think of something specific, or this won't work very well. So think of something from this past week or something, a significant event in your life where you sinned, okay? It could be outward or inward, but it's a clear matter that God is working on you even as I'm mentioning it right now, or was working on you then. So I want to ask you some questions about that. I want to ask you first so that you can kind of learn this a little bit. This is coming from, adapted from Instruments in the Redeemer's Hands by Paul Tripp, which is a really good book. I know that because I read 1 chapter of it on confrontation. I've had the book for a really long time, but I never really got into it much. But when I found this stuff, you don't need to reinvent the wheel. Someone said it better than you, then just use the book, right? So that's what's going on here. So what was going on in that circumstance? That's the first question. And it might be helpful for you to jot some of these things down. What was going on when you did X, or when you were struggling with this? So what were the surrounding circumstances, okay? Remind yourself of the factors and the people that were involved. What was happening, okay? What were you thinking and feeling as it was going on? Like in the moment, how were you processing the situation in that moment of sin in your life? Were you personally hurt? Were you angry? Were you disappointed? I'm not sticking up with my slide, sorry about that. What were you initially inclined to do in your heart? So what were you thinking? How were you approaching that when sin was coming to bear in your life and you were evidencing not the fruit of the Spirit? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? These are all diagnostic questions. You notice I have not accused you of anything yet, okay? In that circumstance, what was going on? What were you thinking? What were you feeling? And then, what kind of happened on the outside? What was the bad fruit of that, okay? What did you do in response when you sinned in this way? What about the way that you handle things was put on display? I'm gonna ask that again. What about the way that you typically handle things was brought to the fore and put on display in this situation? Did you try to control a situation? Were you vindictive towards someone? Were you angry at God? What selfish actions came out? And then we get to why. Why did you do it? And here's, I think, the best question I've ever heard asked on this when it comes to why we do what we do when we sin is, what did you want? Okay? The last time you really struggled with sin. It shouldn't have been too far off in the past, I don't think. What did you want in that circumstance? When we get angry about something, and I'm just totally borrowing from Pastor Will Galkin right now, when we get angry over something, it reveals the idols of our hearts, right? What did you want in that circumstance? What were you not getting that you wanted? And then, lastly, what was the result, okay? In other words, after the thing happened, what came about? Did it get worse because of your response? You know? What further complications arose because of your sin? Did you try to excuse yourself or accuse another person? Did your relationship with God and or another person take a hit? Okay, what were the things that resulted from that circumstance? These are all questions, I think, for us to consider first. So if you were to take these and this week use that as just a little bit of a project, I already did this morning. It helped. It helped kind of reveal what I was thinking in a circumstance of sin, right? And this could be applied this way. And it's not like you have to go through, all right, I'm confronting someone, so I better my paper and make sure I ask all these questions correctly. But these are all really good diagnostic questions that get at the root of what's really going on in someone's life. Because just like Jotham was saying earlier, we don't want to not get at what's really going on in their life, what's really at the heart, okay? So I hope these are helpful, but they're going to be helpful insofar as you kind of examine yourself through them first, I think, so that you'll know how to ask them. There are better ways to ask these questions, I'm sure. But that's kind of what we're getting at. What was going on? What were you thinking? What did you do in response? Why did you do it? And what was the result? So the four big points of confronting that we're going to be talking about is, first of all, just so you know, for next week, one is confession. One is consideration. We just talked about that. Number two will be confession. And both of those, consideration and confession, are about the put-off side of things. Okay? So you're talking to someone, you're inviting them to consider their actions. You're inviting them to consider a thought pattern in their life. And I really mean inviting them to it, because you want to come alongside somebody. You want to be considering yourself more as an advocate, not as an accuser. Okay? Because there's something higher at play than your relationship with this person, right? It's their relationship to God. So the first put-off steps would be just that idea of considering what you've done and being honest about what you've done. So that's next week. We're going to be talking about those, about that specifically with confession. And then the put-on side of things are two more C words, because if you have an effective outline, it's alliterated. That's the only way that people remember anything. I don't usually remember alliterated outlines. Number three will be commitment. So calling someone to a specific commitment. And again, confronting doesn't always have to be with something that's gone against you. It could just be something you're seeing someone doing. It has nothing to do with you, but you love this person enough to bring it up. And you want to counsel them through it. So we are going to be learning how to counsel people. That's kind of what this is, okay? So commitment is put on number one. And then change is put on number two, because commitment and change are not the same. They're not, okay? I make commitments all the time. I change little. And so that's what we're going to be going for.